Hey, welcome to Arts Live and Local. That music, you may have figured out, was from Haiti. We're sending our healing to the people of Haiti. Not necessarily to the government, but to the people. And to all over the world where it seems healing is needed. And especially to Frederica and Ben Frederica, Susie, Jan N, and you, if you want it special. Refuah Shlema. This is Carol here with Arts Live and Local. July 9th, 2021. Yes. And we've got guests today. I heard on the radio, I heard them say that in indigenous languages, perhaps some, perhaps many, I don't know, there's no special word for nature because we are all part of nature. And it is all, and she is all part of us. And the comment was, if you want to stop abuse of women, start with the earth. So welcome. I'm glad to be here on this. Turned out to be another gorgeous day. Every day is beautiful, if we can live that way. And my show today is very organic, speaking of nature. Lots of connections to nature. My first guest, for example, is Jim Fitzgerald, whose stunning photography is exhibited right now at Lightbox Gallery in Astoria. That's 1045 Marine Drive. And they're only open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. No, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Excuse me. So take advantage. Do not miss this. And I'm going to let Jim tell you why you mustn't miss this. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Carol. How are you? Thanks for having me.
You bet. Well, I was trying to explain to someone what you're doing, and I decided just to tell them to listen to the radio and let you speak for yourself. Because I read, and I also watched that excellent OPB video.
Thank you.
And I was totally enchanted. But I want you to tell us. I'm just going to give your show is called A Banquet of Light.
And that's correct.
You are a large format film photographer and carbon transfer printer.
Yes.
And everything you do seems to be one of a kind. Is that true?
Yeah, Carol, it's pretty much true. The type of work that I do, each and every print is handmade, handcrafted. So they are all one of a kind works of art, yes.
So tell us, large format film, I think a lot of us can imagine, although I saw the book that you did, and I don't think that's something that most people would consider possible. So I want you to tell us about that. But in general,
sure.
What do you consider large format film photography? And then what is this carbon transfer that you use? The thing that jumped out at me, in addition to the beauty, is also the fact that there are no chemicals. So it lasts forever because there's nothing harming it. So my blessing for nature. And, of course, your main subject is the tree. Trees.
Yes.
And so go for it, Jim. I'll step in and ask questions. But you wanted to talk about what you're doing.
Cool. Cool. No problem. Well, as you said, Carol, I'm a large and actually ultra-large format film photographer. I'm a woodworker, camera builder, a workshop instructor. I'm a bookbinder and a carbon transfer printer. So what is large format film photography? That's basically considered a 4x5 size image and up. That gets you up to my smallest format that I use is 8x10. And then when you consider ultra-large format film photography, that generally encompasses 11x14-inch cameras and larger. And so the book that I have on display at Lightbox is original handmade carbon transfer prints that are all 8-inch by 20-inch prints from the film negative that was exposed in the camera that I built. I build all of my film cameras that I use.
Right. So that was the other thing that I had to go back and read this, listen to it again, because it sounds as though you're a DIY person before the term
yep.
got popular. So
if
you decide you want to do a book, then you study bookbinding. And
right.
then if you want a certain kind of a size or a certain kind of camera, you studied and learned how to build your own camera. And
correct.
I don't know how old you are. I suspect you're in your 60s now.
No, you got to go up another 10 years. I'm 70.
Oh, okay. Well, that helps because one of your traits as an artist is that you are willing and able and actually demanding of yourself that you take time to do things, that you put
yes.
in the time that's needed. So I don't know. Have you been this way? Has this been your personality all your life?
I think so. You know, at an early age, I was fascinated by trees and nature. My dad would take us to places, you know, in the woods and the forest, Yosemite and along the Oregon coast, and was always fascinated with the trees. And I grew up in Manhattan Beach, California, so I was close to the ocean as well. So there was that constant struggle between the mm-hmm. ocean and the mountains. And, mm-hmm. you know, the mountains kind of took over. So I've always been fascinated by that. But as far as my desire to just keep pushing the envelope, so to speak, I think that came later on when I got back into my photography seriously here about 20, 25 years ago. You know, I just had to do things the best that I could possibly do.
So where did the carbon transfer come? First of all, tell us what that means, carbon
sure.
transfer.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll make it as brief as I can. Basically, carbon transfer printing is a process that was perfected in 1864. And what you have to do is you create a pigmented gelatin. And that pigmented gelatin is in a liquid state, and you pour some onto a temporary support material, let it dry. You sensitize it with a light-sensitive liquid. You expose a negative into that temporary support material to ultraviolet light. Then you take that sheet that has this liquid material on it. It's dry and quite pliable. And you basically, underwater, you mate that surface to a final support material. You let it rest under glass for a while, and then you put it in a tray of hot water, and you melt the gelatin away. So when you melt the gelatin away, it's stuck to your final support material, and you just agitate it until the gelatin melts away, and it melts away more so in the highlights, less in the midtones, and not as much in the shadow areas. So when you're done, you have what looks like a three-dimensional release image.
Right, which is what I was going to mention. Totally looks like three-dimensional. So it actually
mm-hmm.
is. Isn't it? Because
yes.
the way you
yes.
said, the way it
yes.
melts away in by degree. So
yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Shadows are thicker, midtones are thinner, and highlights are very thin. So you have that visual relief characteristic. When you walk to the side of the image, look at it on an angle, you can see, you know, see there's life there. So it's very attractive. People look at it and they're kind of wondering, like, what the heck is that?
Exactly. That's exactly what happened to me. So why does it last forever?
Well, here's the thing. With there's no residual chemical that's used. I use a light-sensitive liquid to expose the image. But once the image is washed and properly cured and the gelatin hardens, the only thing that you have in the image is hardened gelatin.
Wow.
So there's no residual chemicals in there like in, say, a silver print or other processes where there's noble metals or things in there that can deteriorate or be affected by ultraviolet light. Mm-hmm. Carbon transfer prints are the most archival prints you can ever make. They will last thousands and thousands of years.
It's amazing.
Because there's nothing to degrade them over time.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good thing because they're absolutely gorgeous. And
you've
captured. Now, that's the process. You mentioned that you were strongly attracted to the trees and the ocean, but, or the mountains. But the earth part won out. So how does it work for you? I've read that you go back to some of the same places.
Yeah.
And record the changes.
Correct. Yeah, I have been working on a long-term project. The first fine press edition book that I did, my Survivors One book, was shot in Yosemite Valley. In one day, I was hiking along a trail, and I started a project documenting the black oaks in the valley that were fighting for their survival. And so my Survivors One book was created with images I shot in one day.
Wow.
And that was in my first book. And the books that I create are the only books of their kind that have ever been printed with original carbon transfer prints and original carbon transfer text.
Yeah, what is that about?
Have ever been done.
Well, I don't even understand. How do you do the text with as carbon?
Well, I print a negative. It's the only time I use a digital interface. Is I'll print a digital negative that I write all the text and write all the copy. And I print it in a digital negative on a special film. And then I print from that digital negative, just like I would a regular image.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at it, if you think about it, everything in the book is printed underwater. The whole book is printed underwater. It's kind of crazy when people hear that. They don't understand it, but that's how the prints are made. They're all done underwater. So the difficulty with this process is every one of the letters in that book has to be the pigment has to be removed from every letter. And I stipple every letter with an artist brush in hot water to remove residual pigment. It'll take me an hour or longer to develop a page of text.
Yeah.
So it's a demanding process, and there's only a handful of people in the world that are really qualified carbon transfer printers. It's just something I gravitated towards. It was me. It was just my nature to do something that's this laborious. people say I'm crazy, but I really look at my experience with photography, and carbon transfer printing is much easier than the other processes that I tried, silver printing, you know, years ago. I can go into the darkroom and make four finished prints in a day.
Well,
what's not to like about that?
It feels like just hearing you speak, even not to mention seeing, it feels like a meditation. And I watching the video, seeing how you move in the forest and how you relate to the trees. And then also you have music going. And where is the music, Jim?
The music's in my head.
And what
music's in my head?
What music is that?
I have been a lover of Beethoven for since I was a little kid.
Yeah.
There was a deep connection with the works of Beethoven, and so I have Beethoven's entire collection on CD that I listen to all the time, and that's my inspiration, and has been so for many, many years. So when I'm out in the forest, I arrive at my destination, and then Mother Nature just takes over. I wander, mm-hmm. and I am drawn by the light. I have music of Beethoven that is swirling in my head, and so I just go to where I'm drawn. And mm-hmm. the light draws me, the music draws me, and I set up, and I am just fortunate to be able to connect with the power of what I'm being shown and, you know, create some images that mm-hmm. hopefully resonate with people. And it just, it makes me so happy. I'm so fulfilled when I come back. And, mm-hmm. and even if I don't get an image, what's not to like about seeing what Mother Nature has to offer?
So, yeah. Now, do you do this in different kinds of weather, or do you need, because you have a great big sheet over your head, but what's protecting your camera?
Well, I generally look for sunny days, because that's conducive to the process, the way that I see the light. You know, if it's raining, the light is soft. It takes on a whole different feeling, and my work changes accordingly. Mm-hmm. But so I generally like to work on sunny days when a lot of photographers are saying, I'm not going out to photograph because the light's too bright. With me, it's not a problem whatsoever. So I can work in just about any kind of conditions. But I think as I've gotten older, I've gotten a little lazier when it comes to that.
Well,
I like to stay warm.
I think a lot of us can relate to the idea of getting lost in nature and letting it take over. But when nature takes over you, you're still operating that camera and recording these gorgeous images. Now, I saw you also have, I don't know how long this has been going on, but it seems you have a protege, which sounds fantastic, because you've devoted so much of your life and so many years and your spirit in this art form. And now it seems that this younger man, how old he is, but is just as passionate, or he's learning. And that must feel good to you.
Yeah, it's really a wonderful thing. Logan Clark is a young man who lives not too far from me, I've taught him the carbon transfer process, and he's just taken it and made it his own. He understands the power of what you can do with this process, and it makes me really happy, because I love to educate people, and if I can bring out that wonderment in people and like, wow, this is what I can mm-hmm. do, and if they take that ball and they run with it, it makes me happy. I just enjoy inspiring people.
Right.
Because I've been inspired by many people over the years, and if I can pass that along, it's really really a wonderful gift to give to people. And, you know, it's why I love being involved in, like, the members show at Lightbox.
Right.
And,
I'm going to get to that, too.
All of the photographers that I've met out mm-hmm. there, it's a great thing to pass along what we know.
Right, and to share all of this learning. Do most professional photographers and or not professional, but photographers, know about carbon transfer?
No, not really. Not really. It's a process that is becoming a little bit more popular now, but it's an obscure process that was almost gone. Mm-hmm. And a few people many years ago in the late 80s, early 80s, late 70s started to bring it back and started to practice it. I've been a carbon transfer printer for 14 straight years, mm-hmm. It's gaining a little bit more popularity. The difficulty is it takes a lot of time, mm-hmm. and people sometimes they just don't want to invest the time. that is required. And that kind of, you know, puts people off, because we're in a society where people want instant satisfaction, and that's just not me. So
that's why I started by asking about your personality, because I would think you need the temperament to do this work.
Yeah, you do. You need patience for sure.
Patience. There you go. Okay, now you brought it up. And I was going to ask you, your show is, solo show is at Lightbox Photographic Gallery at 1045 Marine Drive, and will remain. But also this month, the members showcase exhibit is opening tomorrow during Art Walk, Astoria Art Walk. And you are a longtime premier Lightbox member. So are you having other work in that show, or
I have a new piece in that show from my last trip in May to Yosemite. Mm-hmm. I submitted some work for the show. It's wonderful. The Lightbox the members, the variety of work is exceptional. When I met Michael at Lightbox a little over 5 years ago, I was just amazed at the quality of the work that I was seeing on the walls. And to be a member and part of the members show is really special, because every member there has a unique perspective on their work and is willing to talk and educate, you know, people. And so it's really a special show.
Yeah.
And I'm just glad to be a part of it.
Well, we being the locals, feel very fortunate to have a Lightbox Photographic Gallery here. It is a top of the line. And some of the other members, as you say, unique style, and also world-renowned photographers, some of them. And so people come from all over. So, again, folks, I would highly recommend that you get over there. It's only open Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, usually 11 to 4, but there will be specials. And here's what your best bet is: to go online to Lightbox, L-I-G-H-T, box, dash, photographic, .com, and then you can see, and one of the treats there is that all the past shows are there, and you can just click on something, and Michael and Chelsea have been there for 12 years. My, how time flies. So
absolutely.
It's been wonderful. How long is your show up?
My show is going to be up through August 10th. I'm going to be giving a talk about the book and how it's done, the inspiration behind it, on July 24th, and then also one on August 7th. And then we're going to be conducting some workshops. If anybody's interested in learning how I do what I do, we're going to have a workshop, I think one in August and one or two in August and one or two in September. I'm not sure. But they can always contact the gallery for more information there. So I'll be teaching workshops at Lightbox on how I do what I do.
Okay, and I don't know how many people are going to be able to be at those talks. So if you are interested, folks, go to the website, get the information, give them a call or whatever it takes. Get your name in there. And feel free. This is kind of a cooperative gallery at the same time, even though Michael and Chelsea bear the brunt, the responsibility, and have been able to keep the gallery and workshop open. People can become members, as my guest, Jim Fitzgerald, did.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how did you even learn about Lightbox? If you live in... Where do you live, in Vancouver,
live in Vancouver, Washington. We moved up from California a little over 5 years ago, and through some photographers in the Portland area, I heard about Lightbox, and my wife and I decided to take a trip out there, and we love coming out to Astoria. It's just, it's a marvelous, marvelous place to come. Sure, I'm an hour and 45 minutes away, but you know what? It doesn't matter. The drive is beautiful.
Yeah.
We've been out in all kinds of weather,
mm-hmm.
and I absolutely love coming out to Astoria, and Lightbox is just, for as a photographer and an artist, my God, become a member of Lightbox, because you look at what's on the walls.
Yeah.
Where else are you going to see nothing but photography on the walls? It just makes all the sense in the world to me, and I became a member immediately and have been a big supporter of the gallery. I believe in what they do and want to help educate people as just as much as Michael and Chelsea do.
Well, thank you, because you don't live here, and you are one of the people who help support it, and that's what we need, because we're in a tiny little town here. So
I know.
To have that kind of quality is special. Jim Fitzgerald, thank you so much for being my guest. And
my pleasure.
I really look forward to meeting you and going back and seeing your work again, and maybe even getting in on one of those workshops. So thanks so much for being here on KMUN.
All right, Carol.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah. Jim Fitzgerald at Lightbox Photographic Gallery, 1045 Marine Drive. Again, it's lightbox-photographic.com, or just research. And it's a gem. And we've got some music for you. I think you might even recognize these folks, because these are two of our treasured locals. And they've got a concert coming up. They are the first concert at the Waikiki Beach Cape Disappointment series. And that will be tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. Have a listen to The Hackles. This is Carol here at KMUN.org, your community radio station. Thanks for being here. That's Luke Yitzty and Katie Claiborne, The Hackles. And you can hear their music right here on KMUN, as well as in other times all over the place. And they are, again, going to be the startup. That's tomorrow evening, 7 p.m. at Waikiki Beach. Yeah, I know. That's the name of it, though. It's Cape Disappointment on the Long Beach Peninsula. And there's a whole series of concerts coming up there, and they're quite wonderful. And by the way, tomorrow evening also at the Sou'Wester, we've got three for Silver, Gypsy Jazz multi-instrumentalists. I've seen them several times. I really, really enjoy them, and you might also. That's in Seaview, and at 4 o'clock on the peninsula, these are all on the Long Beach Peninsula, right across from Astoria, to be geocentric. At the Peninsula Performing Arts Center is 4 o'clock, Steve Frost and special guests. And, yeah, so I'll tell you what else is going on. Of course, tomorrow is Art Walk, which is what we're featuring today. And I am staying in the neighborhood, okay? So I told you Lightbox is at 1045 Marine Drive. Well, we're just going to step over just a couple of steps to, let's see, 1033 Marine Drive. And that would be the Brumfield Gallery, which is... This is live radio, folks. And I'm sitting out in the parking lot, and I'm delighted to have Nevada. Can't see him right now, but I know he's in there working the dials there. So we have a fabulous staff here. Now, back on the streets for Art Walk is the Brumfield Gallery at 1033 Marine Drive. And this tomorrow is an opening, although there's art there all the time, beautiful stuff. You can see it in the window as well. But someone whose work caught my attention is Ruth Hunter, who is working in oils and cold wax and abstract figures, her colors, the light, it all just drew me in. And I thought, oh my, I would love to invite Ruth. So Ruth Hunter is here with me. I hope, Ruth, hello. Are you there?
I don't know whether Ruth's there, but I'm here.
Oh, well, I'm not sure what happened. But my other guest is actually the owner of the gallery, and that would be Jane Brumfield. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Carol.
I'm not sure what's going on because...
I'm here.
Oh, Ruth, are you there?
I am here.
Oh, good. Hi. Okay. Okay.
Well, thank you, Carol.
Okay, good. Good. Okay. So we have two guests, and Jane... Are you the curator for all of the shows that happen at the gallery?
Right, yes. Yeah.
Wow. It's a large gallery, and of course, you have lots of experience with that. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Now we've got all kinds of things happening. I'm not sure what to... hopefully, that will be over. Oh, my goodness. I think there's...
Live on the street.
Well, I'll tell you what's going on, folks. And this is good news for our community and certainly good news for our radio station. We have been on lockdown for the last year and a half. And I know that the galleries have experienced some of that as well. But we have started to come alive again. And so some of the programmers are coming in today to reacquaint themselves with our station, with some new equipment, etc. So that's why you're hearing all kinds of sounds and a little background. Now, Ruth's work, I was saying, it's luscious, it's soft. It drew me in, and then all the noise starts. So that's okay. That's okay. We can do it. We can do it. I'm going to get Jane to talk about some of the other artists afterwards and how she finds all of these incredible artists. But I wanted to hear from Ruth because your work, reading about it, you know, I know that some people, whether it's writing a book or painting a painting, some people come at it with, I know what I want to do, I know what I want to say, and they get to it. And it sounds as though you're on the other end of the spectrum.
Right. I go inward. I find my imagery through the process of painting, through mark making, and just the activity of mark making. It kind of connects me to myself and, of course, connecting to also color and the sense memory, and those two things combined, form the figures in my work. And from the gestures, you can say a lot about a feeling or an attitude, and the color enhances those emotions. So I'm just kind of working through my own inner sense memories.
So
in that way,
I'm curious because your colors are, that's part of what drew me in, and I wonder, do you intentionally or first, let me go back a little bit. How long have you been using color? I think you said, and I quote, mark making was my first language.
Right.
I had never heard the term mark making until maybe a few years ago. Is that, how would you explain if someone says, what is she talking about?
Mark making, it has to do a lot for me with drawing, and I used to do portraits as a street artist. So I did what I call brush portraits, and I did those with an ink and a brush. And so to give you kind of an idea, you put down a mark on a piece of paper, and you have to jump off of that one mark and create an entire picture around it.
Oh.
So I used to do that same concept with a portrait, only when I'm working with my painting and my figurative work, it's the same kind of concept, except I'm layering the marks one on top of the other, and the marks being in abstract expressionism a language. So you're kind of building the language one on top of the other, and the color kind of comes in and enhances that for an emotional impact.
So and that was partly what I was starting to ask you is, the colors, did you experiment with, or for example, when you were doing portraits, were you using color at all? And because your colors are soft and they work together so beautifully, but very different from many other paintings. So I'm wondering, did that develop slowly but surely, or did you come at that from a intuitive sense that those were the colors you were attracted to? Because you are also very connected to nature.
Yes. I think I built it from in my intuition. I sense the color on an emotional level, but also, it's from years of study and color and playing with color and using it. You tune your eye, I guess, to not just what you intuitively gravitate toward, but also what chromatic harmonies work best together, and to create that emotional impact that I'm looking for in a painting.
Well, it works. I can tell you, first timer seeing your work, I was definitely moved. I wonder too, and people can hear it in your voice. You come from the South and the Southwest. Now you're in the
Southeast.
Southeast, and now you're in the Northwest. I wondered whether that changed your work. Your sense of light, color, whatever.
Yes, I think so. I mean, the light here is stunning and wonderful. You know, just the atmosphere of being in the Pacific Northwest, and you know, it's so arid here. More so than in the South, very humid and kind of the atmosphere is a little more heavy. I'm very inspired by the Pacific Northwest light and climate. The nature here is more kindred, I guess, my spirit, and you know, just the mountains and the trees, and being close to the ocean, and
Did you know that you would feel that way? I mean, you came out for family reasons. And
yeah, my daughter was already here.
And so it's.
I visited a couple of times my daughter before I moved out, and I just fell in love with the place. Of course, I wanted to be near my daughter.
Sure.
And you know, get away from the hurricanes on the East Coast.
That's good. She picked a good place to live, huh?
Yeah,
that was fortunate.
I agree.
Okay, now, what material do you use in your work?
I use oil and cold wax, which is kind of a saponified, emulsified wax, combination of waxes and mineral spirits. And you combine that with tube oil paint. I use it on a birchwood panel when I'm working on large works. Sometimes use it on paper, which I mount onto smaller panels. I really enjoy using it because it sets up quickly, and I can work continuously. I can carve into it. I can layer it easily, and it just has a way of absorbing the light, and when the light goes through the layers, it bounces off the ground back through the layers so that it kind of translucent. You know, it has a translucent quality.
That may be part of the lusciousness that I'm feeling. So, because I haven't seen it in person, only in so I'm looking forward to that. And you do have some large work there.
Yes, yes. I think a couple of pieces are 36 by 36.
So where are you working these days? Are you still able to make big pictures?
The 36 by 36 is a good size for me right now. I would love to work larger, but at this time... my husband and I are both painters, and we basically set up our studio in our living room, in our little one bedroom flat here in St. John, in Portland, and you know, it's we have to keep it pretty tidy and, mm-hmm. and organized, you know.
I would think so.
It's like living on a boat. You know?
Right, right, right.
So wow. I'd love to work larger, but I don't know. It's space. How do you store it, you know, and get it to where you need to get it? That's the question. So if I were going to work larger, I would probably need a larger space to do that in, unfortunately.
Well, but, in the meantime, this is great. The show opens. Well, I've got Jane here to give us logistics as well as some other material. My understanding, the show opens tomorrow and runs through September 5th, which is great, which means people have time to see it. But don't think that way, because I've done that and I've missed things thinking, well, I can go next week. So Brumfield Gallery is and the... Again, on the web, brumfieldgallery.com, nice and simple, 1033 Marine Drive. So, Jane, you still here with us?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. Okay. So, how did you meet Ruth?
Well, she was an example of when it just falls really lucky for you, and she actually walked into our gallery when she very first moved here. This is when we were still in Cannon Beach.
Uh-huh.
And asked me if I would be interested in showing her work. It's usually not that easy to find artists, but in this case, it was very lucky.
Yeah, and as soon as you saw it, you said, I think so, yes.
Yeah.
Just right.
Yeah, I think
good choice. Now, tomorrow you also have work from opening by Angela Perviance, is that right?
Angela Perviance, yes.
Perviance.
She is an Oregon printmaker. So we are showing some etchings of hers, and that's in our small printmaking area, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's all new work.
And we also have
the continuing show in our sculpture area, which is Kelsey Bowen's little sculptures, which are darling if you haven't seen that show yet as well.
Well, I wondered... because both Kelsey and Angela are focused, well, their work has a lot of children in the work, and they're very different, and yet the joy and the action is obvious in both. I really enjoyed. You do a very good job. I highly recommend folks go to your website. You do a good job of offering videos. That's where I saw Ruth Hunter's work. And then I checked out Kelsey Bowen with bodies of children and heads of sunflowers and rabbits and all kinds of good things. And also Angela, whose Color Intaglio prints, magical realism. I consider both of them kind of magical realism. And Ruth's is magical. Just magical. There you go. So I'm delighted. Jane, anything you want to tell us about when people should come and see your work, the work you have at the gallery, and what else?
So the artwork, for this month at least, is still being spread out over the day. So the art walk itself officially starts at noon, but we will be open through till 8 p.m.
Oh, good.
We actually do open at 11, so if you wanted a really early start, you could come early. I know Ruth is coming for the opening, which is, this is the first time we've encouraged our artists to actually come out for the opening now. We didn't want to put our artists in a situation where we were putting them at risk.
Yeah.
But now we're feeling a lot more comfortable with that. So Ruth is coming along, and we'll be there probably a bit later in the evening because she's got to travel down from Portland.
Right. Excellent. Okay. So this is tomorrow for Astoria Art Walk, and I'll tell you some of the other things that are going on. But also, your gallery is open Wednesday through Saturday, 11 to 5, and Sunday, 11 to 4. So that's terrific. so people can catch the gallery every day, Wednesday through Sunday. So, excellent. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining me on KMUN, Arts Live and Local, community radio, where everything is live, or it's going to be live again. My show has been live all along, and I'm delighted, and congratulations, Ruth, on this show.
Thank you so much.
And it's lovely to meet you, even on the telephone.
Well, I would love to meet you in person.
I look forward to that.
Thank you so much for having us on.
You bet. Okay. Be well.
Okay.
And some of the other galleries, Astoria Art Loft from 1 to 4 is featuring frames, and McVarish Gallery, Bad Food, with a whole bunch of people. Angie DeWilt is Bill Dodge's work, our beloved Bill Dodge, and Weird Sisters Freak Boutique, showcasing Stone Soup Salon, where you can bring in art pieces you're not going to finish, and then other people will collaborate. It sounds like fun. Imogen Gallery is featuring Mysterium, new acrylic paintings by Bethany Rowland, who's been on this show, Astoria Institute of Music and Center for the Arts, Cicely Gilman and Ivan Sultan, and The Regulars, and Ashriver Woodworks, which is a new family-run business specializing in river tables and reclaimed furniture, Lumen Community Wellness with Kristen Nekovar, who's a new painter, and Bridge and Tunnel Bottle Shop. These are not your ordinary galleries. We don't have anything ordinary in the arts in Astoria. Jasper Stone will be there. Riversea Gallery is showcasing Fierce Grace with paintings by Samyak Yamochi and tribute to pet lovers, or I would say animal lovers, inspired by the passing of his dog. And Judith Altruda, KMUN's own, is featuring her jewelry, and she'll be there from 4 to 7 tomorrow, and Yamochi will be there from 5 to 8. And then the Cambium Gallery has Jackie Wood for The Power of Color. Astoria Visual Arts is presenting 55 artists. I went by, and quite the diversity, and we'll be talking more about that because they have the art studio tour coming up. Also tonight, we talked about it last week, the Coaster Theater is featuring Shakespeareans tonight, and tomorrow night, the Mystery Theater at 6 p.m. in the park, Cannon Beach, and tomorrow the the Clatsop Animal Assistants yard sale is tomorrow benefiting the shelter, and we talked about the other art that's there. Sunday, Norman Sylvester. Oh, we have his music. I don't know whether we have time, but maybe we can put a little bit of his music on. Oh, yeah, we got plenty of time. Boogie Cat of Portland Blues is going to be in the Cannon Beach 2nd and Spruce Park. Bring your blankets and your chairs. And Thursday in Cannon Beach Park, the same park, is Buskers Happy Hour with Wish Flower. And I think we'll listen to Norman Sylvester take us out. Thanks for being here, folks. It's great to know that some of our favorite programmers are going to be on the air live, so they won't have to talk to themselves all the time, as Albert complains every week that he's walking by me as I speak and shaking his finger at me. This is KMUN Astoria, KTCB Tillamook, community radio, KMUN.org. And we love to hear from you, know you're supporting your favorite radio station. It's very exciting to see all these people returning. The staff has done an incredible job keeping us on the air. Thanks, folks. Stay tuned. Stay well. I'm still wearing my double mask. And I hope you are, too, when it's appropriate. And keeping your neighbors and friends and family safe. And then do something extra for the earth and to make peace in this very troubled world of ours. Thanks, folks. Take care. Bye-bye. Just want to give a shout out to Squamish and Seashell, Omaha, and to Nova Scotia, Nouvelle Écosse, to Sydney and Robin, and Tessa and Seb, and Agnes and Lucy and Lottie and Clotilde, and to all who listen to our radio station. Thanks, folks. And a happy birthday to all of you celebrating today or any day this year.